Institute of Politics. My name is Maher, and I'll be your host for today's forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 under the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Hinckley Institute strives to teach students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers internships here locally, in D.C., and in 35 nations around the globe. Hinckley also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences in D.C., and over $400,000 in academic scholarships. For more information, please go next door or to www.hinckley.utah.edu. The title of today's forum is Big Brother versus Big Business, Perspectives on the NSA Controversy. Our guest speaker will be Kashmir Hill. But first, please welcome me in joining Professor Randy Dwyer, a professor here at the Law School and the Honors College.
Well, it's my pleasure to introduce Kashmir Hill, the senior online editor at Forbes, who will be talking about the NSA controversy. And she has a few prepared remarks, and then she'd be happy to take any questions that you might have. Kashmir is a graduate of Duke University, and she has a master's degree from NYU. She's had a whole variety of reporting experiences, ranging from traditional mainstream print media to her current position, where she writes an online daily blog titled The Not-So-Private Parts. And I would encourage you to take a look at that. I think you'll find it quite not only educational, but also entertaining. Kashmir practices what's sort of referred to as immersive journalism, where she integrates herself with the story that she's writing, and oftentimes writes from a first-hand perspective. For example, she hacked into a smart home to show how illustrate the dangers of this new technology with the Internet of Things and how our homes are becoming connected. She's written several stories about the new digital currency, Bitcoin, so she decided she would just live on Bitcoin for a week. She lives in San Francisco, and she says she lost 5 pounds because there weren't many people that sold food that took Bitcoin at the time she did the story. But we're delighted to have her on campus, and I hope you enjoy her remarks. So please join me in welcoming Kashmir Hill.
Thank you both. So I was out at Utah last year, and I spoke at the Hinckley Forum then as well. And when I was visiting, I've been writing for a long time about privacy and security and kind of government surveillance. And I had read a Wired article about how the NSA was building a data center here out in Bluffdale. And it was all about kind of how, you know, I think the lead was about Big Love meets Big Brother, and it was the NSA and Utah around Mormons. And it was basically here because Camp Williams had the space to host it, and that power was cheap in Utah, and it was going to use a lot of power. Have any of you guys been out to visit the data center? It's maybe about an hour drive from here. Oh, you have? Did you go inside or just drove by? So Randy Dreyer, the professor who invited me here, asked what I wanted to do in Salt Lake City besides ski. They said, well, I'd like to go see the construction site for the data center, which was an odd request, but he indulged me, and we drove out there, and I was surprised how visible it is from the road. It's, like, very close. You can see the buildings. It looked like it was nearly finished around that time. That was March of last year. And it also didn't seem to be very secure. There was a road that went right up to it. So we turned right and went into the parking lot, and we were right up next to the buildings. There were a lot of cars parked in the parking lot. And then there was a sign that had the NSA logo, and it had the logo for the National Director of Intelligence. And it was this digital sign, and the sign was flashing, and it would say, look this sign, and then it would change over to works, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. And I thought that was hilarious, so I pulled out I pulled out the only camera I had on me to take a photo of it, and that was the kind of the worst spy camera ever. It was my iPad. So I was like holding up my huge iPad, and I took a photo of the sign, and then we drove around a little bit, and I just took some photos of like the view that the NSA workers would have of the mountains and then a few of the buildings. And we were about to pull out of the parking lot and head back to the University of Utah when a uniformed officer came out, and he said, what are you doing here? Is that a camera? You can't take photos here. And then we proceeded to have this kind of, we were detained there for about 45 minutes, and it was a back and forth between us and a series of officers over whether I could keep the photos or not. And I was explaining that I was a journalist and, didn't realize that we were trespassing. And luckily, I had a very good media lawyer with me in the form of Professor Dreyer, and so he was very helpful. And we were able to leave after I agreed to delete two of the photos that showed and a vehicle there with its license plate, and they were uncomfortable with that. So I left, and I went back to Forbes, and I had all these photos, and we'd had this kind of long discussion with the officers, and it was very interesting, just them talking about wanting to protect their own privacy, they talked about how they didn't think the security was very good there. So I consulted with Forbes' lawyer about publishing these photos that I had taken, and she approved it. And so I wrote a piece about it, and I think the title was something like, Surprise, Visitors Are Unwelcome at the NSA Data Center in Utah, Especially When They Take Photos. And soon after I wrote that piece, a friend of mine who used to work in the intelligence community in cybersecurity and then left to go work for Hollywood contacted me and said, I really want you to be careful, Kashmir. And I said, why? And he said, you really should not mess with the NSA. And I said, oh, do you consider this article messing with the NSA? And he said, I consider talking about or thinking about the NSA, messing with the NSA. so I was worried after that. I wondered if I was going to be monitored in some way. The NSA at that time was very, very secretive. People said NSA stood for, it stands for National Security Agency, but they said it stood for no such agency or never say anything. And it really was not a well-known, it was not like the CIA or the FBI where we knew a lot about what they did or how they collected their intelligence. And so I was alarmed. And it's interesting to me how much that has changed this year. I think everybody knows about the NSA, knows a lot about how they gather information, thanks to Edward Snowden, a former IT person for them, who last year when he was just 29, decided to turn over many documents that he had access to because of his administrative privileges to journalists. And now we know so much more about how the NSA works. And many of these things have been kind of rumored to be happening in the community that, for example, they have spy satellites that are just kind of picking off any kind of signals that they see in order to hear telephone conversations, intercepting those, that they're able to tap into these undersea cables through which lots of internet information travels and just collect that and copy it. And for anything that's unencrypted, read it and store it, that they had access to information about our phone calls, that they had access to emails. Now we kind of know how they have that access. I don't know how much I want to cover that, how much you guys have been following the stories. Have people been generally covering, reading the NSA stories that have been coming out from The Guardian, Washington Post, and other places? Okay, then I won't go over it too much, and I'll just talk about more the reaction in D.C. and more so in San Francisco. I'm based in the technology capital of the country, and a lot of the information, NSA is tasked with collecting signals intelligence, which is electronic and digital data, and a lot of that comes from the companies that are in Silicon Valley, those companies that we love to use. Probably most of you use Google. Most of you use Facebook. Most of you probably have a phone of some kind, unless you're kind of a digital hermit. And those are the tools that the NSA has been using and turning to in order to collect intelligence to, you know, try to prevent terrorist attacks and other like more kind of problematic investigations. So one of the big stories, the first one that broke, was that Glenn Greenwald at The Guardian published this court order from the very secretive Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court that asked Verizon to turn over all of their phone records for all of their subscribers, the metadata around those telephone calls, who they had been calling, when they called them, how long the conversations lasted. And people were generally surprised by this because it affected most of us. If you've used a phone in an NSA database somewhere, they said they needed all of this information so that they could, you know, find certain patterns in the way that terrorist networks were working. They could query that data up to three hops. So let's say one terrorist talks to another terrorist, then they can basically look at three hops out what the network is, and that allows them to create these diagrams and see who knows who and how they might be working and who they should be going after. And so this was the first big, huge kind of story that broke. And it was interesting because the telephone companies didn't really comment on that. Verizon didn't say much about this. When they were asked to comment, they said, you know, this is, you know, we can't comment on this. This is national security. Oftentimes the orders that come to them asking them for this data come with gag orders. They're not supposed to talk about it. This is supposed to be a hidden thing that happens in the background that nobody knows about, because the last thing you want to do is alert a terrorist that you're after them or you know what they're planning on doing. So the telephone companies didn't say much about this. And then we moved from the telephone companies to more of the internet companies, and we found out about something called PRISM, which seemed to involve capturing actual communications. They were somehow getting access to supposedly kind of bulk communications. And the internet companies, Facebook, Google, Yahoo, were very vocal right away and said, we don't know what PRISM is. We're not cooperating with anything like this. We don't think, you know, we are compelled to cooperate when we get a government order, but they do not have the initial claims that they had basically direct access to their servers. And they said, that's not true. No one has direct access to our servers. And so that was the first time we really had kind of the government versus the tech companies, and they were saying, this is not happening. We're not cooperating to this extent. And the big push from the tech companies in order to respond to these reports has been that they want to release more information. And so they've been pushing the government to let them talk more about what information they do turn over, how many requests they get per year. Google has for a long time been doing something called the Transparency Report. And they'll talk about, in all the different countries, how many warrants they get, how many subpoenas they get, how many times the government comes to them wanting information about their users, and how often the government's coming to them wanting them to get rid of things that are on the public internet, which is more about First Amendment and censorship issues. And so Google kind of led the charge saying, well, we want to be able to talk about these more secretive government orders that you haven't been letting us share with the public, national security letters, NSLs, which come from the FBI, and then these huge kind of bulk ask for data that come from the NSA and the FBI at very high levels, Section 215 orders, 702 orders. And so that's been like the big fight that's kind of been playing out between them. And then more stories broke. And then we found out that the government was actually getting data from these companies that they didn't even know about. The NSA discovered that, so a lot of times these companies encrypt their data. When you go to a website, you get the HTTPS. And that means that something that is being sent over the internet is masked while it's traveling and decrypted on the other end. So you can't, if the NSA were kind of tapping the cables, they would get that and it would just look like gibberish to them unless they could crack the encryption. But the NSA discovered that there were points of travel where the data would be unencrypted, and that was between the data centers. So from one like Google data center to another, there was a little pipe where it just traveled unencrypted. And the NSA targeted those areas, and they started grabbing information from there. And the companies did not realize this was happening until they read about it in the Washington Post and in the Guardian. And they published these PowerPoints that showed like a little illustration of how this was done, and the NSA had put a little smiley face there because they were very pleased with their ability to break into this otherwise secure system. And this is when the companies got really upset. Google was outraged in its PR statements coming from company officials who were authorized to be making public statements, and then Google security engineers turned to Google Plus, and they basically wrote posts that were like essentially F the NSA. and they were really upset, and they said, you're making us treat the government, the intelligence community, like nation-state hackers, like people that are trying to find vulnerabilities in our security systems and exploit them. And So part of people have been very, the leaks have been controversial. Some people think that it's a really bad idea, that we are, helping the enemy by showing them how our intelligence agencies work. Other people think that it's been good in a way because this has allowed some of these big companies to see where their vulnerabilities are and fix them. One thing that the kind of business community is united around is that this has been very difficult for them financially and with their customers. People like Google and Facebook and Yahoo and Apple and Microsoft have complained when oftentimes the government's reaction to the leaks has been, we're only doing this to spy on foreign citizens. We're not doing this to Americans. We respect their privacy. There's a whole different process. But for tech companies, they say, that doesn't really help us when we're talking to our customers abroad. and that's where a lot of their customers are. Cisco, which is a network infrastructure company, has said it's been hurting them abroad. They've lost contracts in China. China doesn't trust an American company anymore. Various analysts have said that this is going to have a huge toll on the cloud industry, which is just there are a lot of companies in the U.S. That are built around basically storing information in the cloud so it can be accessed anywhere. And analysts say that that industry stands to lose anywhere from $30 billion to $180 billion over the next 5 years as companies outside of and customers outside of the U.S. don't want to work with American companies. So that has had the effect of, the business community is usually pretty supportive of the intelligence community, and everybody wants to keep citizens safe. But this has really hurt them, and it's hurt their bottom line. In some cases, companies it's really empowered, especially small businesses, to come forward and be very vocal about the kinds of abuses they think they're seeing by the intelligence community. There was a email operator in Texas, a guy named Ladar Levison, who runs a tiny little encrypted email service called LavaBit. And it was different from something like Google. With Google, like when you guys sign in to check your email, all you need is a password, and then you can read anything. And anybody who had your password anywhere could sign into your account and read it. And Google itself could look at your emails. What LavaBit offered was encrypted email, where you had to have a key to decrypt it. And otherwise, if somebody signed in and they didn't have your key, they would just look like gibberish in your inbox. So it was just a more secure way to communicate with people. And when Edward Snowden, he fled to Hong Kong. He went to Hong Kong, and then he fled. He was trying, I believe, to get to South America, but he got stuck in Russia. And when he was communicating with activists there, he said, feel free to send me an email at edsnowden@lavabit.com. And so he announced to the world and to the intelligence community, if they didn't already know, that his service provider was LavaBit. So in July, LavaBit posted an announcement on their site that they were shutting down, that they had been asked by authorities to do something that they felt was unconstitutional and they were forced to choose between what they felt was right and their business. And so Ladar Levison shut it down. And this was, it was shocking to me. I've never seen somebody come forward like that. Usually any kind of order that Ladar got would have come with a gag order, and he's not supposed to talk about it. If law enforcement comes to you and they're trying to investigate one of your customers, you're supposed to stay quiet about it, so otherwise you'll alert the person. So this was like a huge no-no, but it just showed the way that people are now starting to feel empowered to push back against the way that surveillance and law enforcement has really evolved here. And Ladar has kind of over time basically said the FBI came to him and wanted his encryption keys so that they could read Edward Snowden's mail. He has never actually said that. He never, in order to try to like finagle his way into complying with the gag order, he doesn't say which customer they were coming after. He just says it was they were coming after someone, and everyone knows that it was Snowden. But they wanted his encryption keys so they would be able to read it. But the way that Ladar's site was set up, the way his company was set up, is that that one, and this was just a bad design on his part, but that one encryption key would be able to be used for all of his customers. So by handing it over, he wouldn't just be allowing the FBI to read Snowden's email. They could read every single one of his customers, and that was his problem with it. He was fine with, if they have a reason to go after Snowden, which they do. He leaked confidential documents, or certainly an investigation into that. He was willing to turn over that email, but he didn't want to make all of the rest of his customers insecure by handing over the key that would decrypt their data as well. So for him, it was a huge dilemma. And this is kind of the larger argument that with all of these things that the NSA is doing, that it makes us, it puts all of our data into these databases, and that data can be abused if the NSA isn't complying with the requirements of the law. And this has been something that has been talked about a lot. Has the NSA abuse their access to this information? And the big story that's come out on that is, what the NSA does is called SIGINT, or signals intelligence. And they had something that was happening so frequently that it got a name, and it was called LOVINT. And it was when NSA agents were using their access to all of this information to get to basically spy on significant others, or exes, or people they were interested in. And they were querying the database to see who their loved ones were talking to. So this was kind of a big scandal. And when this came out, the NSA said, well, in all these cases, the people came forward and told us, or we heard through the person who was being spied on that they felt like this NSA agent that they were dating or NSA worker knew too much about their lives, and they reported to NSA, and then they went to the agent and they confessed that, yes, they were like abusing their access to the databases. And that was the part of it that I found the most disturbing, was that the databases were being abused. There were people that were being searched that were guilty of nothing, suspected of nothing but, cheating. And the NSA didn't have a way of catching them. And that means if there are abuses happening, there's not a good monitoring or auditing system in place where that's being caught automatically, as opposed to having somebody come forward and confess. And of course, you see that with Edward Snowden himself. He was able to gather tens of thousands of documents, and the NSA had no idea it was happening until after he had left and handed it over to journalists. So there are a lot of concerns about just how the NSA was just kind of maintaining this internally. So anyways, I'm happy to take questions if there are specific parts of this that you would like to focus on, things that you think are interesting. Happy to address those.
If you do have a question, please wait for the mic, because we do want to actually record this broadcast.
Hi, my name's Josh. Can you hear me? My name's Josh Greep.
Is the microphone working?
Okay, cool. The question, and I think a lot of us that are uneducated about the NSA, I think we're just these normal citizens walking around thinking, what do they have to deal with our personal lives? They're not dangerous or anything. But I mean, with all the science fiction kind of going around pre-crime and that kind of thing, I guess a lot of people kind of fear that. And I guess my question is, what does the NSA kind of say their stance on that kind of thing is in, you know, incriminating people who haven't actually committed acts of terror or that kind of thing?
Yeah, that has been one of the things that hasn't come out yet. I'm assuming at some point that will emerge, that they have some kind of pre-crime trying to identify things before they happen. I see that more happening actually on the local level. Law enforcement agencies are starting to use, what is that movie with the precogs? Minority Report? It's not quite at that level, but they do have algorithms they use that will look at crimes that have been committed, and they'll analyze it over time, and it will tell them, you know, this is the area where you're most likely to have a break-in or a car theft, and so then they'll send more officers to that area, and they'll just patrol it at a greater density. And those things do seem to be working. So I assume that's going to just happen more and more. But, yeah, for most people, I think the NSA data collection doesn't really directly affect them, beyond the fact that, yeah, your phone records are in this database. It affects certain people. So it's as a journalist, you know, I'm very sensitive and aware of the fact that national security reporters are definitely, you know, two or three hops from terrorists and get pulled into these investigations. And you just run into problems with using this information, using these tools to intimidate certain populations, to silence critics. The last big kind of scandal over something like this was in the 1970s, and intelligence agencies were basically spying on the black population. They were really worried about the Panthers, and they were conducting kind of surveillance of innocent political activists, and that led to the Church Committee and a reform of these practices. And I think you see it happening now. There's a great, great book that I really recommend reading called The Enemy Within, and it's about the NYPD developing a task force that was just spying on the Muslim community because they were certain that the next terrorist was going to be homegrown. So they had agents that would just hang out at coffee shops, at mosques, and just take notes on the community there. And I just think that is that's very uncomfortable to feel like just because of your ethnicity or political views that you're going to become part of surveillance on a daily basis. But yeah, pre-crime, I'm sure there's like a scoop on that coming at some point.
So this is, I guess, essentially a question on how big are the NSA computers in the following sense. The technology is available, widely available, to do the kind of email encryption on a one-to-one basis, personally, right?
Right.
And you can do things like Tor routing to, you know, hide your source and destination addresses. In theory, a big enough computer can even break that level of cryptography. Do you know how much would it cripple the NSA if we all did that? If we all encrypted at that level?
I mean, at this point, it would be hard for them. I mean, they talk about this as going dark. There would be more things that they wouldn't be able to grab, but they're aware of that. And with encryption, actually, one of the things that has been revealed is that the NSA has tried to weaken encryption with the RSA and getting them. Encryption is involves, you know, math and creating like a unique formula that only you know how to solve. And so the NSA allegedly got RSA, which is a company that provides encryption services, to have a weakened random number generator. So the NSA would be able to basically know the numbers that were being used to generate the encryption so that they could break it. The NSA is also known to be working on quantum computing. These are going to be, it's kind of theoretical at this point, and some people think it's pseudoscience, but these computers that will be so much faster that they'll be able to look at these patterns, this encryption, and just break it very easily. So something you might be using today to encrypt and protect yourself may not work in 5 years or 10 years. And they would be able to retroactively, because of the way that we store everything online, they could go back and look at your former email activity. So the NSA right now, it was revealed in terms of information that they'll keep, if they see something that's encrypted, they will just keep it and save it, knowing that down the line they expect to be able to break the encryption. And so it may be a completely innocent email that you're sending, but just because of the fact that you encrypted it, they see that as a sign that it could be something criminal or suspicious, and it's worth keeping around until they can look at it, which is very... You know, some people might say, good idea, and other people feel like that is an invasion of people's privacy rights.
Hi, my name is Connor. I'm a sophomore here, and I was wondering if you had any detail on the NSA's operations during the Winter Olympics here, because I've heard reports that when they were here, 2002, I heard reports that, like, everyone in the entire Salt Lake City area, their phones were being monitored and text messages were being read. I was wondering if you had any information or detail on that, because that would obviously affect us.
Yeah, I haven't heard about that. Maybe somebody here has more insight into that than I do. I know that, you know, cities do get very careful during Winter Olympics. Russia is supposed to have drones flying around, license plate readers, attempting to monitor internet traffic and seeing if they see anything suspicious. But I don't know anything particularly about Salt Lake City during the Winter Olympics.
Hi, my name is Carlos. I read a report about the NSA or one of the agencies intercepting people's purchases of electronic equipment like laptops, mm-hmm. and putting things in there so they can track it when people go dark or when they're not online.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard?
Yeah, so this is one of the leaks that has come out that when they... And I think, like, no terrorist is ever going to order their Apple computer online ever again. But and this is one of the ones where this was a very controversial leak. So journalists have access to lots of different information NSA tactics right now. And supposedly they're only reporting on the ones that they feel are, you know, threatening, inappropriate. And so some people feel like this leak was not an appropriate one. So the NSA, when they, I think a lot of people know now and have known for years that the NSA is intercepting a lot of internet activity. And so some people were getting computers and then keeping them offline, and they would only have, you know, sensitive data on computers that never touched the internet. And that way the NSA could never get into their systems. NSA was aware of this, and according to this report, would, when they were ordering computers, they would intercept them and then put spyware essentially in the keyboard that was able to send information, that was wired in some way so it could send information to them. So then even if you had an offline computer, there were still ways for them to intercept what was happening on it. And I believe some of the PowerPoints were, like, inappropriately redacted, and it seems like they were, you know, using this technique in Iraq and in wartime zones. And now people are aware of this, and I just don't think they'll ever get that kind of equipment online, knowing that this could happen. They're going to walk into a store and buy computers in cash. But yeah, that is something that was a technique that they were actually using, and probably won't be too effective moving forward.
Hi, my name is David. So there's been a lot of news about the NSA recently. I was wondering what your opinion is about threats to privacy from companies like Google and Facebook, who it seems to me would have just as much information about all of us as the NSA. And it seems like there's much less interest in what they're doing with the data. And I wonder how much oversight there is and how much danger to privacy there is there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why NSA is trying to tunnel into Google databases and Facebook databases, because they do have so much information about us. You know, the argument from the company side is, well, you shouldn't, and corporate advocates say, well, you shouldn't be as concerned because, you know, the government with that data could use it to hamper your rights, to throw you into prison. Corporations are just interested in, like, giving you good deals and serving up good ads, so don't worry about it. But I think increasingly people are concerned about the amount of information that they've handed over to these companies in exchange for, you know, cool and free services. Part of the solution is these kinds of encryption services. So I can do encrypted email through Gmail. And so when I send an email encrypted through Gmail, Google isn't going to see what's inside that message, and they're not going to be able to use that to, you know, contextualize ads. I think people are pretty alarmed about how that information gets used, and especially in the United States, there aren't a lot of laws that govern it. Basically, you're supposed to be reading the terms of service and the privacy policy for every single company that you use, and that's how you know what they can do with your data. So I think people are concerned about that. Right now, the NSA is getting a lot more attention, but in D.C., they're talking a lot about whether we need to restrict how these companies use that information, who they sell it to, kind of give us more control over it. And so they'll continue talking about that for years, and I'm curious whether something will actually happen.
My name is Kevin, and other than what I've learned here today, I'm not too familiar with the NSA or its doings. So I guess my question is there a one person that oversees and calls all the shots in the NSA and makes sure that they don't overstep any laws, and not just singularly in the sense of checking on your significant other, but in the sense of encrypting or disencrypting Google's encryptions?
Mm-hmm. So right now the head of the NSA is General Alexander, and he is also the head of Cyber Command, which is basically our hacking force that we send out against other countries trying to aggressively get information. So some people have been troubled by the fact that he's in charge of this civilian intelligence agency and then also a kind of military hacking force. He is stepping down, and Obama has nominated Mike Rogers, somebody from Navy Cyber Command, to take his place. In terms of a watchdog, the NSA is going to get a privacy officer for the very first time. They did not have one before. The oversight process was basically they were supposed to go kind of through the FBI to the FISA court and tell the FISA court what they were doing. And these judges, most people had never heard of the FISA court. They didn't realize it was there, what it was doing. But these individual judges were deciding whether what they were doing was appropriate or not. Other than that, it was supposed to be Congress overseeing what the NSA was doing. But the members of Congress that were on that committee during these leaks have said, well, we didn't realize some of this was happening. So I think one of the things we have definitely learned in the last year is that the oversight of the NSA was not as robust as it should have been. And so that's one of the things they're considering in the reform is whether we should have a better oversight process or a board that really investigates what they're doing.
Hi, my name's Nancy. I have a quick question. So my essential question is, has it worked? I feel like, especially in this type of situation, it's a little give and take. We give a lot of our privacy so that we can be protected. My essential question is, has it worked? Have we been protected that you know of? Has there been a case where that has happened?
So this is, a lot of people have been asking the NSA this, okay, so you have all of this internet information, you have all of these telephone records, what have you prevented? What terrorist attacks have been averted because you had this information? And certainly, there are probably some that they don't talk about. There are a few that they'll name. One of the ones that is in that book that I recommend, The Enemy Within, So this one NYPD unit was supposed to be monitoring New York for any homegrown terrorist. And in fact, there was one there. This one guy from Brooklyn or Queens got radicalized along with two of his friends. They're like, let's go to Pakistan and see if we can join Al-Qaeda. And they just went there kind of blind. And they did actually manage to meet a member of Al-Qaeda. And they went to a training camp. And they wanted to go fight in Afghanistan. The Al-Qaeda said, well, wait a second, you guys you're American citizens. We'd much rather send you back there. So they taught them how to make bombs and then send them back to the U.S. And one of the guy that was kind of the leader went to Minnesota, started building a bomb, built the bomb in his like aunt and uncle's basement, and emailed this Yahoo account and said the wedding is ready, which was the code for like I'm ready to do this. And that Yahoo account was one of the ones that the NSA was surveilling as part of maybe PRISM, but one of their intelligence programs. And so they flagged that, and that led to the monitoring of this person. And that kind of by chance and luck, they ended up keeping this guy from, he planned to bomb the 456 line in Manhattan down at the towers on September 11, 2008 during the memorial service there. And that attack was prevented. And I'm really glad because that's actually where I was on September 11, 2008. I was like reporting down there. So in that case, that's like one of the ones that you can point to as it was really helpful that you had the NSA and intelligence. But for most of the examples they've pointed to, people have said there were other ways they could have gotten the information, that you didn't have to have this kind of dragnet surveillance. Even with that, they could have gotten a warrant because this Yahoo address was known to be associated with Al-Qaeda. They could have gotten a warrant to be surveilling it. So that's part of the backlash here, is that the NSA hasn't really been able to point to a whole bunch of examples of how this has kept us safer. So the concern is we have all this surveillance and invasion of privacy, and we're not really getting benefits out of it that we should be.
My name is Eric, and you've sort of touched on this throughout a lot of the comments you've been making, but I'm wondering, do you think that the oversight of the NSA was enough if we increased it? Would that be, I guess, sort of enough to rein them in, or do you think that they still have too much power? If so, what needs to be taken away, I guess? Maybe how do you think we could solve this issue? Because it seems like a lot of us here and you are upset by how much power information they're gathering on us.
Yeah, I'm not in the like abolish the NSA camp. Some people, I see this a lot, abolish the TSA, that people feel like there's a too much security theater at the airport and it's not very effective and they don't want to have to like raise their hands above their head when they're going through. Just like going on a trip to see a family member. But yeah, I mean, I think the NSA, especially in today's world, is necessary. You do need to be, you know, collecting some kind of signals and digital intelligence. But it's obvious that the oversight was not enough. One thing they've talked about in the FISA court is having like a privacy advocate. So before, the NSA would go to the judge and say, we need to do this, and this is the reason. And there was no one on the other side to say, to argue for the rights of whatever person or group they wanted to gather information on. And so that's one thing that's been proposed, is that there should just be somebody arguing on behalf of the other side, the privacy side. So that could be one change. I think that there's going to have to be some kind of internal watchdog. Hopefully the privacy officer helps with that. The privacy officer that was working for the Homeland Security, Department of Homeland Security for a long time, Mary Ellen Callahan, has since said that, you know, she would raise objections and they were ignored. It's great to have a privacy officer or a watchdog, but if you don't listen to what they say, then it's not very effective.
Hi, my name is Kyle. I don't have a lot of experience with kind of the journalism aspect, and a lot of what we've been able to read has kind of been, to some degree or another, filtered through the writings of the different journalists. My question pertains to what you were talking about with the companies and kind of them doing their data mining, and then how they've come out and kind of fought for privacy, and you've also talked about the business aspect of that. And I'd be interested to know your thoughts on why this topic is so important for these companies, if it really is solely a business aspect, or if they're really fighting for the privacy aspect for the people, or kind of the privacy aspect for themselves internally as a company.
I mean, some of the things, like one of the recent leaks pointed out that the NSA uses Google and many other internet companies, but their tracking cookies that they put on people's computers. The NSA would basically like look at those and be able to like, pull information out from that about who a person was. So these companies have in many ways given the tools and information to the NSA that they're now using. And so it's like they created it, and now they're upset that someone else besides them are using it. I would say, especially with the technology companies, in Silicon Valley, it's a very like kind of techno-libertarian view of the world. And it tends to be people who care a lot about free speech and privacy. And so my sense is that these companies really do care about privacy as a human right, except when they're trying to monetize people's data. And they think that they're doing it in like a really respectful way. You know, Facebook will say, we don't sell your data to anybody. We just like put it all together and then we let advertisers come here and advertisers show you an ad based on the data, but we don't give it to them. You know, we're just giving them a path in, and we care about protecting your data from hackers. So it does put them into a kind of hypocritical position because they want to gather as much data as they can about people, and then they're upset when the NSA does the same thing. This has especially come back to haunt Eric Schmidt, the former CEO of Google, now chairman, who used to say things like, if you're not doing anything wrong, then you have nothing to hide. And a lot of people have kind of thrown that back at him when he got very upset about the NSA going after information. So, you know, I think they do care about it, and they certainly care about it more than the telephone companies. Telephone companies have been cooperating with the with intelligence for a very long time. It doesn't seem like they put up any fight against handing over bulk data to the government about their users. And it's just like a very different... it's probably because they're older companies. They had to work with the government very closely around regulatory issues, and they don't want to, you know, make the government mad by not handing over data. So I think the kind of Silicon Valley crew does care more about privacy, and they do seem to be trying to make people safer by adding new kind of security measures to try to prevent this kind of hacking. But yeah, I think it's a really interesting and complicated point and position.
Hi, my name is Juwan Hing. I was just wondering, after you published that article on visiting the NSA as a surprise, did you or your company run into any problems with the NSA at all? Or
not that I know of. No. So one of the people there, one of the agents who wanted me to delete my photos, told me, just delete your photos. You can come back later. You'll have a tour. We'll take you on like a real tour of this center. Please just delete your photos. And I really didn't believe that. And so when I did go back, I called the NSA press person, a woman named Vinay Vines, and I said, you know, I went out there. They told me that they would take me on a tour, that I could go back and go on a real tour. And she's like, we don't give people tours of our intelligence facilities. Like, what are you talking about? Are you crazy? Yeah, I've done some follow-up reporting since then. I actually came back. The Travel Channel read that post and wanted to do a segment on the data center. So I came back here last year, and they wanted me to drive back up into the facility. And I was like, I'm not going to do that. I know I'm not supposed to be there now. But we did do a helicopter ride where we, like, flew kind of over and around it, and not directly over it, but very, very close to it. And I haven't gotten into trouble yet. You know, statute of limitations doesn't run out for a while, so hopefully nothing happens. But I think they have bigger things on their plate now with Snowden.
Hi, my name is Joshua. So besides surveillance and online privacy, are there any other NSA programs or happenings that have come up that we should be concerned with?
From the NSA? I mean, I think one of the big things that we're starting to talk about is something called hackback, and whether when you're, this is kind of like a thing that companies are dealing with, if they get attacked by hackers, should they be allowed to basically like follow the hackers back from where they're coming from and then hack into them to figure out more about them? And so this has been a policy point that people are playing with. Should we be allowed to do that or not? And the NSA, the Cyber Command would be involved with that. Just kind of bigger issues will be So right now, most of where the NSA is able to get their data is from phones and computers and satellites. But we're starting to bring more and more things online. Your car is going to be connected to the internet, your lighting system, your thermostat. And we're not really thinking about security with those things as much. So I think a concern will just be like, what other sources are they going to start turning to for data? And, you know, is that okay? Are we comfortable with that? And the company that makes your connected refrigerator, you know, a fridge company hasn't been thinking about internet security, but now they're connecting this device to the internet. And so they just don't have the experience that, you know, Google or Facebook has around security issues. So I think that can, there are going to be some problems that just arise from that.
Hi, my name is Lindsay. I just had a question about a while back you said that they hacked into Google's, like they found a weakness in Google and they were able to extract information from that. So how is the NSA, who is checking the NSA basically on those actions? And like, does anybody, is there any punishments that they've received or stuff like that?
Not really. I mean, that's part of why Snowden argued that he felt he had to come forward with these documents is he was looking at what the NSA was doing and he thought that it was hugely problematic and unconstitutional and that, you know, there wasn't a mechanism within the NSA to report it and basically have it watchdogged. And so he felt like he had to go release these documents in order for the public to start talking about these things and for people to decide whether they should be happening or not. So, it seems like there wasn't an effective way until this. And this is what, you know, periodically happens, basically. Oftentimes, like, leakers see things that they don't like are happening, and they feel like there's no other way to stop it beyond leaking the documents, whether you're Daniel Ellsberg with the Pentagon Papers or the group of activists that broke into an FBI office in the 1970s and found all these documents about spying on Martin Luther King Jr. and others and released it to the press. There's a book about that just came out that's called The Burglary, which might be worth reading. But yeah, I think people felt, I mean, at least Snowden felt that there was no other mechanism for this to be checked. And it doesn't seem like lawmakers realize that, you know, the NSA was hacking into Google. Yeah, so the Obama administration appointed this board to look at all these things that they are alleged to have been doing, how they're operating, and they made suggestions for how it should be reformed. And it'll take a while for those to take action. But one big one is that they don't feel that they should have the telephone metadata and that should be kept by private companies and shouldn't be in a big database that the NSA has. So supposedly that program is going to be dismantled.
Now, unfortunately, that is all the time we have for today's forum. Please join me in thanking Kashmir Hill for a wonderful forum.
Thank you.